Good morning. Let's go ahead and get started. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is February 20th, 2008, and the time is 9:04 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. The title setting board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my left is Dan Carton, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is Charlie Pike. Today we have four proposed initiatives, two for this morning session and two more this afternoon. And I should also introduce, to my far right is Ceci Gomez from the Secretary of State's office. Just by way of procedure, there's sign-up sheets on the table by the door in the back of the room. Anybody who wishes to testify, please sign up. The meeting is recorded and it's also broadcast over the internet. The procedures that we follow, for each agenda item, the board members first will be given an opportunity to ask questions of the proponents. It's important that we understand, make sure that we understand each proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. And that necessarily requires determining whether each measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. And then third, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then it will proceed to consider setting the titles using a staff-prepared draft, which is also a copy of which is on the tables by the back door. Generally, we take the testimony first and then have discussion and vote. A decision is reached by two out of the three members of the board, and anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the board today can file a motion for rehearing within 7 days of today. With that, I'd like to turn to the first agenda item, which is 2007-2008 number 57, Criminal and Civil Liability of Business and Individuals for Business Activities. And if we could hear from the proponents first, I believe Mr. Gruskin, you represent proponents. You could introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. My name is Mark Gruskin. Our firm is counsel for the proponents. I don't think I'm as sick as a little hoarse. So,
do you have any general remarks before I ask if there's questions? Anything you think we need to know before we proceed?
I guess these are questions. No, I don't have it.
Are there any questions from board members about number 57? Let me see. I think I have one or two questions. Just looking at the text, subsection 4 says that it's a complete affirmative defense for an individual charged that he or she reported the matter to the Attorney General's office. And I'm assuming that's a complete affirmative defense both to a criminal charge as well as to the civil damages that are also provided for?
That's correct.
I have a question. What do you expect the Attorney General to do with these reports?
In terms of the reports made?
Well, yeah, under subsection 4.
Well, it seems that once the Attorney General has that information, the Attorney General can determine whether or not to pursue any sort of action under the laws of Colorado.
S- subsection 5D says that monies from the civil damages are exempt from, I think this is the 6% general fund appropriation limit. What's the purpose of that? I mean, maybe this gets into the single subject discussion, but how is that related?
That was a change made based upon a recommendation at the review and comment hearing. Original thought was that these monies ought to be able to be acquired without being subject to any sort of paper limits. And review and comment hearing, it was staff indicated that they were already exempt, but that if that kind of flexibility was to be built into the measure, that this would be a better change.
Is there something, and I didn't look for this, is there something already in the 6% limit that exempts damages or things like this?
No. The answer to you, the staff did not raise that.
Okay. No. Other questions for proponents? Mr. Carton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gruskin, on the amendment to 18.1.606, subsection 1, the new language is business entity, and the new language, agent or high managerial agent, are guilty of an offense if. And then in paragraph 1A, provides the conduct constituting the offense consists of an omission to discharge a specific duty of affirmative performance imposed on the business entity by law. And I guess my first question, and I'll just kind of go down the line here. My first question was it unnecessary, given, I guess I'm wondering why the new language hasn't been inserted as well after business entity in 1A, or if that's unnecessary to conform it to the change in the introductory paragraph. And then in 1B, the language states, as we go forward a little bit, authorized to manage the affairs of the business entity or by a high managerial agent acting within the scope of his or her employment or in behalf of the business entity. And there it mentions the high managerial agent, but does not mention an agent. And then finally, in the penalty provisions in subsection 3, the next to last and the last sentence state, for an offense committed on or after July 1, 2003, a business entity shall be subject to the payment of a fine. And then the next sentence says, an offense committed by a business entity that would be a misdemeanor or petty offense committed by an individual shall subject the business entity to the payment of a fine. And again, I just wondered why, whether it was necessary to conform that language in subsection 3 to the change in subsection 1 as well. So, for example, in the next to last sentence, it would read, for an offense committed on or after July 1, 2003, a business entity agent or high managerial agent shall be subject to the payment of a fine. That's my kind of overall question, is why those types of conforming amendments are not in place or are unnecessary for the remainder of the measure.
Well, let me address them one by one. The original language used a definition that legislative staff found duplicative of the definition of agent, so that language was used throughout. The particular conduct in 1A and 1B those provisions were not changed because the purpose of the measure is to address accountability for the business entities acts. obviously individuals have liability under the existing statutes for their own acts, separate from this statute. This is about, as the title suggests, criminal liability of business entities. And therefore, the question was how far beyond that entity could the law go? I don't believe that the changes to 1A or 1B were necessary. As to the conforming amendment to 18.16063, seems to me that either would have been repetitive because the question would be whether or not the legislature can amend the statute further to provide that clarity, or whether or not there are separate offenses that might be implicated. I think that, you know, probably optimally, the language relative to offenses committed after July 1, 2003 could have been amended as well, but it seems to me that ultimately that's going to be legislature if it feels that there's clarity that's required, and since it's in the statute.
The offense that's referenced there in 18.16063 in the sentence that begins for an offense committed on or after July 1, 2003, the offense is the offense described in subsection 1 of 18.16066.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not actually sure that 3 is as related to 1 as your question presents.
Okay.
And the reason is that 3 uses the reference to a corporation. 2B defines business entity, and 1A addresses business entities. Therefore, it seems to me that 3, we would have had to have changed 3 entirely to expand it to business entities as well as corporations. So that's probably a more limited provision than the extent of 1 and 2. And standing on their own, 1 and 2, because, as staff pointed out, these are not separate offenses. These are simply circumstances surrounding which there's liability for an offense. So 1 and 2 stand on their own separate from 3. And therefore, again, I would reiterate that the legislature can, if it chooses, make 3 consistent with 1 and 2. But currently, 3 isn't consistent with 1 or 2 anyhow.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the proponents?
Actually, I have a question about how you see the civil damages aspect of this working. What would the citizen or individual residing in Colorado who brought one of these actions, how would they show civil damages? I mean, what do you expect that to work? What would they have to show? Give me an example, I guess.
If there are damages flowing from the non-performance of the duty required by law, what comes to mind is an entity is required to cease polluting. It refuses or fails to do so, mm-hmm. Even though it's under an order from the Department of Public Health and Environment. And there are damages to the downstream users or other aspects of the environment or other citizens. It seemed to me that
So this would be kind of a QTAM type thing. They wouldn't have to show damages to themselves necessarily, but to the state.
That's correct. They're acting as private attorneys general. And for that reason, there is no personal participation in the damage.
If there's no other questions, let's move on then to the question of whether the measure complies with a single subject requirement. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on that question? have Doug Friednash signed up, but I don't know whether you want to testify on this or not. But welcome, Representative Friednash.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a few years since those days, but I appreciate it. See you. I'm here on behalf of the Denver Metro Chamber of Commerce. And I'd like to actually touch on some of the things you just brought up in terms of questions, but I think I'll wait to the next aspect of this hearing to do so, as I think it's probably more guided to those things. The concern that I have, without obviously going into the merits of this, are we believe that this does violate the single subject rule. And in the following ways. First, what we're dealing here is with a existing criminal statute, and we are seeking to amend something that's found in the criminal code. That is the title of that, and obviously I don't think the language of it fits within the title, but the title deals with criminal liability for business entities. Now, the first thing this does is it expands the liability for business entities to basically any employee or agent of a company, as I read the definition of agent. High managerial is basically the same as it would be encompassed by the agent anyway. And then the second thing it does is it creates a separate civil private right of action, which is not like the qui tam situation, because the person who brings the qui tam case gets those damages or is entitled to bring damages. The state can be the party bringing the qui tam action. But so it's a little different, but basically creates a private right of action. And that private right of action is separate and distinct from the criminal liability portion of this. Again, it doesn't fit under the bill title in my view, but even assuming it did, it's completely separate and distinct. It's creating a new separate private right of action where any Colorado resident at all can bring a case. And the state gets the award if there's an award, and the if a party is successful, they will be awarded attorney's fees and costs under this section, which is a new remedy to this case. It also creates affirmative defense, which applies apparently to businesses, applies only to the agents and not the business entity itself. The final thing it does is something that was asked about, which is this revenue source, which is apparently going to be exempted from the Tabor, or from Bert Arvizgal Amendment, as I read it. And I think that's a separate, distinct issue. So as I view this, there are at least three separate and distinct issues. Criminal liability, which is the existing bill title this references, the civil liability portion, and creating civil liability for individuals, agents, and business entities. And finally, the third piece, which is this new revenue source, that monies are paid into the Colorado General Fund, but the title doesn't describe that that's even exempted under Bert Arvizgal. So that's our brief reading of how this violates a single subject. At that point, I'm happy to take questions and otherwise pass.
Thank you. Let me ask questions or maybe suggest a different point of view and have you respond to it. Maybe go on to your last point. I am kind of curious if you know whether or not damages are already exempt under the Bert Arvizgal limit.
You know, I brought a copy of that here, and I looked at it, and my understanding is it is not, but I'm not positive. But I think they're not currently exempted.
Okay.
I think the first few sections of 2475.201.1 talk about the specific ways in which the exemptions apply, and I think there's only three or four of them. That's my recollection of looking at the statute.
Well, and let me just ask you then, just going back to the kind of the general argument that we're starting with a statute right now that deals with criminal liability and kind of expanding it. The proposal, I think, is to expand it beyond that. But the caption to the statute, to 18.1606, criminal liability of business entities, you know, my recollection is that's an editorial thing that can be changed as the statute is changed. And I guess I would suggest maybe for the sake of discussion that the subject is something like liability of business entities or liability for wrongful conduct of business entities or something like that, and there may be a criminal aspect of that liability and a civil damages aspect of that liability, but the fact that there's different aspects of it wouldn't violate the single subject requirement.
Yeah, I think it's a title problem. I agree with you. I think the fact that it's creating a private civil right of action as well is what makes it a separate and distinct issue, that it really is going beyond that.
Okay, but it's still the subject would be liability for wrongful conduct of business entities, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be a fair description of the single subject of this proposal?
I think that's one way to look at it. But again, you know, part of what is kind of disjointed in this is the disconnect between Section 1 and 3, as we pointed out, and even in 1A and 1B. I'm not sure how that – I don't necessarily buy the argument that this is going to tie in – that it incorporates employees or agents and high managerial employees the same way that they've articulated. And I think there is a disconnect with respect to the issues insofar that 3 really deals with criminal penalties. This one doesn't create criminal penalties in that context for the employee or agent or high managerial agent. So I think they are a little different.
Okay. Well, and maybe one other thing that I wanted to ask about. For the sake of argument, I guess I could see that the civil damages, you know, is simply, from the proponent's point of view, maybe simply part of the liability they wish to impose on people that are, you know, responsible for the wrongful conduct of the business entity. And once the measure imposes civil damages, the money has to go somewhere. So putting it into the general fund and saying whether or not it's subject to the 6% general fund appropriation limit, arguably then would simply be administrative details that you have to deal with what happens to the money, and therefore it wouldn't be a separate subject.
I understand your position or your articulation of that issue. You know, having served, I think the public is really wary of things that that disconnect from Tabor and Byrd-Arvizcal Amendment. You know, these are, you know, it is called Arvizcal Amendment, Byrd-Arvizcal. People know what it means. I mean, it's got this general vernacular to it, as well as Tabor. And I think they really, when you say you're going to exempt out something from the general fund or spending limits, I think that it truly is a separate issue that calls for a discrete standard or discrete subject. And I think therein lies, you know, the problem.
Other questions from the board for Mr. Friednesch? Thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Much. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on the question of single subject compliance? Seeing no one else, Mr. Gruskin, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand it, the argument is that there are 3 subjects: criminal liability, civil liability, and how the revenue gets addressed. I will tell you, Mr. Chairman, I have recrafted the bill title should we get there, and my single subject description virtually parallels yours. So I think we're looking at it in the same way. I would also note for the board that the Supreme Court has really addressed this issue case of initiative number 1999-2200A. This was dealing with a provisions around the consent for a physician to perform an abortion. And that initiative had substantive provisions, had reporting provisions, had civil penalties and criminal penalties. The court found it to be in the country. Likewise, in this last cycle, there was an initiative number 73 that went up to the Supreme Court in and around a pay-to-play measure. The question was whether or not the remedy was separate from the provision because it required certain, it was a multifaceted remedy, including the invalidation of the election. The court found that to be a single subject. What we're talking about here are various ways to ensure compliance with the requirements of law. And the civil remedy is specifically crafted to be triggered if the criteria in Section 1 are violated. So I think that they are necessarily related to the ability or the subject of the liability for criminal conduct of businesses. As to the bird arbuscale issue, the court over and over has said implementation details are not separate subjects. You could not do this initiative without, you couldn't do a bird arbuscale exception unless this were either part of the law. And there's no reason to think that voters are somehow going to have some mental disconnect over creating the remedy and how the resultant revenues are treated. So I'd ask you to look at that argument as a reflection of the implementation of the measure and find this to be a single subject.
Questions for Mr. Grushkin?
Okay. Well, actually, I mean, I'm not persuaded by the argument that the bird arbuscale part is a separate subject, but I have real problems with the idea that you could take a statute as it exists, applies, creates criminal liability for business entities, and both alter it to impose that liability on individual employees and managers, and then also change the current remedy from imposing criminal liability on business entities to imposing criminal and civil damages on individuals and on the business entity. One or the other would seem to be a single subject to me. But, I mean, I haven't looked at the two cases you cited, but neither one of them sounded exactly on point to me. I mean, obviously, if you're creating a new crime, you're going to have all sorts of penalties for it, but extending an existing form of liability to a new class of people seems like one subject to me, and then imposing on everybody a new form of liability seems really like another subject. I mean, what's the necessary relationship between the two other than trying to, you know, as you say, I guess they're both trying to discourage criminal liability, but I mean that can't be that's way too broad, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's too broad. I think it's, the entire idea here is that there is already a statutory mechanism for assessing criminal liability against employees and agents of a company for their affirmative acts. But what this statute deals with is either the passive act of knowing but not doing anything about it, or in the alternative, not performing the duties required by law. So this simply takes kind of the existing construct of being able to go against a business entity and its agents for their affirmative acts that violate the criminal laws and extending it where it only now applies to the business entity for the knowledge without intervening to take an action as to the criminal act, or alternatively, knowing about the failure to perform a duty imposed by law.
Right. So now an employee, under this measure, a low-level employee under existing law before this measure, who knows that his company may be dumping pollution somewhere, but it's not really his responsibility, but he's learned about it, and he doesn't do anything about it. Under current law, he probably has no potential liability. But under this provision, he's on the hook for criminal liability and civil liability. In addition, the organization previously, the entity, would have been subject to criminal liability, but now they're also subject to this private right of action. I mean, those seem like two sort of things they're related, obviously, but they're not necessarily related. It seems to me you'd be pretty surprised if voting on one to necessarily include the other. It's very different, it seems to me, than the Byrd-Arvishow part, where if you just came in here and said, you know, we need to create this private right of action against business entities, and it was just not the change in Section 1, but just the change, the later change, creating the civil damages and the private right of action for them. You know, it wouldn't, that really would seem to me to be just kind of a detail. You've created this new revenue source and you got to figure out what to do with it. But how that necessarily relates in a not sort of surprising way to extending business entity liability to individual employees, I'm struggling with.
Okay. Well, let me first address one of the issues that was raised in the arguments that this was not a single subject and that you've repeated now, which is that virtually every employee is going to have to face this liability. Definition of agent is actually very, very, very narrow. As already adopted by the legislature, agent is a director or officer or employee or other person who's authorized to bind the entity. And high managerial agent is somebody who's in a policymaking or supervisory role. It seems to me that in terms of actual knowledge, that whether that knowledge is as far-flung and widespread in a corporate entity or business entity is an open question. Those usually aren't secrets that are openly shared among an entire workforce. But in any event, it seems to me that where the court has already addressed measures that have civil and criminal liability and found no single subject problem, over a new substantive limitation with new reporting requirements, that simply extending an existing statute and the goal of that existing statute isn't any more problematic than what the court's already addressed. And we may just have to agree to disagree, but it seems to me that if the court can bless a provision that never existed, a requirement that never existed, and civil and criminal penalties that never existed, and say that they're all reasonably related, that this measure meets that test.
I appreciate that.
Any other questions? If not, then let's turn to board discussion on the question of whether the measure complies with a single subject requirement. Any discussion by the board?
Well, as you can tell, I have real trouble with it. I do think a lot of people would be surprised, even though, and I appreciate what Mr. Gruskin said, that if this were sort of all new, creating new liability for everybody, that might be a single subject, but it seems to me this really is doing two things that would surprise a lot of people. It's extending criminal liability that currently exists to from just applying to business entities to applying to some class of employees, whether it's as broad as it sort of seems to say, anybody authorized to act on behalf of the corporation or the entity, or whether it's narrower than that. In any case, it's extending liability, criminal liability, to individuals, which seems like one subject, and then creating an entire new right for civil damages brought by any resident, creating a private right of action, seems to me to be a surprising extension of the statute that really is a different subject. And I'm going to, if there's a rehearing on this, which I'm guessing there would be, I'm going to reserve the right to change my mind. But at the moment, I see those as two subjects.
I guess I'm probably looking at things as fitting within a single subject. I respect the point of view, and I understand Mr. Domenico's points. I think I am sort of looking at this as falling under the general subject, it may be something like, you know, liability for wrongful acts of business entities. And I think Mr. Gruskin expressed, he didn't label it as a purpose, but I think he expressed that the purpose of the measure was to ensure compliance with the law by business entities. And I think there's several ways that the measure approaches that, and they all, to me, seem to be related to what I think is the major purpose. And like I say, I think they fall under that general subject of business liability. So I think it's probably a single subject in my view. Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with you, Mr. Hobbs. And I think Mr. Domenico has raised some good points here. But I don't see, under the relevant precedent, the surprise that I think Mr. Domenico sees in the measure's criminal civil liability connection. I do think, as Mr. Gruskin has articulated, that these provisions are reasonably related, and I think, as he said, that the provisions of subsection 4 and 5 of the measure dealing with an affirmative defense and then the civil damages are all tied into subsection 1 of the measure and are triggered by an offense under subsection 1 of the measure. So I see the connectivity, and I agree with Mr. Hobbs that it does seem to be that the single, that this does fit under a broader subject or purpose of wrongful conduct of business entities. And I also wanted to just note for the record that there were some changes made from the version that was submitted to staff, and specifically the version of the measure that was reviewed by staff spoke to an associated person as well as a business entity being guilty of an offense and contained a definition of associated person. And that was subsequently changed for submittal to the title board to agent or high managerial agent. And I also would note that in the original draft, subsection 5D provided that the money, the civil damages, shall be exempt from the revenue and spending provisions of section 20 of Article 10 of the Colorado Constitution. And now in the measure submitted to the board, it provides such monies when appropriated shall be exempt from the provisions of section 2475.201.1, Arvis Galbertin. And there were a number of other technical kind of changes that were made in response. In my mind, per 140.105 subsection 2, these changes from the draft that was submitted to legislative staff are in response to some or all of the comments of legislative counsel and legislative legal services, and do not amount to a substantial amendment that would otherwise have them would require to be resubmitted. So I just want to
thank you. Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, is there a motion on the question of single subject compliance? I guess I'll go ahead and move that the board finds that the measure complies with the single subject requirement and proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Then let's go to the titles. We do have staff prepared drafts. Mr. Gruskin, have you looked at the staff drafts? Do you have any comments? And Ms. Gomez will put the staff draft on the screen. I think Mr. Gruskin may have an alternative draft.
I have taken the liberty, Mr. Chairman, of trying to recraft this because I think that, as originally stated, the single subject description wasn't accurate, and frankly, it seemed to me that the title wasn't all that descriptive. And what I've done is I've got a black line version and then a clean version at the bottom. There should be between them. Let me describe generally what I've done. I've stated the single subject much as you did, Mr. Chairman. And then I've changed the initial reference to extending criminal laws because this is about liability, and the statute is so titled, to making it clear to the extent I could in a brief form what this change was in terms of extending it to business entities, agents, and defining them in a parenthetical, begins including directors, officers, et cetera, and then sets forth the two conditions in 1A and 1B, the non-performance of duties required by law and the, in essence, approval by persons authorized to either be directors or manage the entity. I have taken out the affirmative defense language in the middle because it applies to both criminal and civil, and that wasn't clear, and it seemed to me that introducing that before you introduced the civil action might be confusing to voters. I put that at the end. I've tried to shorten in certain instances the language. I don't use business entity in every instance. I don't use high managerial agent in every instance, as you'll see. I've combined the civil action, I've tried to simplify the description of the civil actions and the attorney fee and costs remedies, and then describe the affirmative defense at the end to make it clear what is the affirmative defense and that it applies to both civil and criminal. Tried to keep it brief. I think mine runs maybe three or four lines longer.
Okay.
Can we open any thoughts or improvements the board might have?
Well, if we could, let's take a minute or two and take a look at that. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to look through it. Personally, I think I like this approach better, but I think we're sort of at a fork in the road. Just to decide whether the board wants to work off of the staff draft or work off of Mr. Gruskin's marked up changes to the staff draft. Personally, I like the changes that Mr. Gruskin has suggested and would prefer to work off of that, but I'm curious how the other board members feel.
I would agree with that, Mr. Chairman.
Is that all right with you,
yeah,
Mr. Domenico?
That's fine.
Okay, well, let's work from there then. And I think Mr. Gruskin did pass out some copies. Hopefully people who need a copy. Anybody else need a copy? If it, just want to see if, yeah, if anybody, do you have enough for anybody else? Oh, okay. Does, if there's others that want copies, yes, let's just take a minute and we'll run some other copies off. Mr. Friednesh, maybe when you're ready, we'll give you a chance to respond to this, but I want to give you a chance to look through it. Ms. Gomez has some additional copies for anybody who wishes another copy or wishes a copy. And again, is it, I still only have Mr. Friednesh signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to sign up to testify on the titles for number 57? Mr. Friednesh, are you pretty close?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. If you'd like to give us your comments on Mr. Gruskin's draft.
Thank you. I'd make the following points, I guess, just reading through this. I think it should indicate, when I look at the fourth line down, it says directors, officers, certain employees. I think it's all employees, or just employees. I think certain employees is misleading. As I read, again, the definition of agent, under the existing law, it says, means any director, officer, or employee of a business entity. It's not certain employees, it's any employee. And so that's the first thing. So I think that should be stricken in order to make it not misleading. And then it says, and agents. I think it should be high managerial agents to be consistent with, you know, the statute. Again, it's, and for other reasons, as we'll see in a second, but because the high managerial agents are the ones who formulate business policies or supervise employees. So that's what that is intended to mean. And I don't think we should create this inference that it just, the problem is it creates an inference that it only applies to these certain employees or high managerial employees when, in fact, it's any employee at all under a business. And I think that needs to be clarified. Farther down, where it says creating a civil action against a business, its agent, I think it needs to say, again, that it should say it's a private right of action by any Colorado resident. Again, voters need to know that this applies to every single Colorado resident. Otherwise, it's not clear who the civil action applies to. And then it strikes against a business. If I'm going too fast or I'm losing anyone, let me know. Apologize. Okay. Against a business or its agent. Again, this is confusing in that we've used a different description here than what exists above for the criminal liability. Again, it creates a inference that the criminal and civil piece is different when they're the same. It applies not just to agents. Again, it's the all employees. It should indicate it's liability to civil liability applies to business entities, agents, including directors, officers, employees, and high managerial agents. So I think that should be clarified in this area, too, for the civil piece of this. The discussion about the general fund of the state of Colorado, I understand your uniform position about that, but I think we need to indicate that it is exempt from state spending limits. And I think that should be clarified so the voters, that's not hidden from the voters. I think that's something the voters will want to know and should be advised about the very specific nature of this funding mechanism. The last piece, well, two other real quick points. It says, and allowing persons who disclose the Attorney General all facts known to them, I think it really should say requiring, it's not just allowing, you have a duty. If you want to utilize affirmative defense, you've got to report this to the Attorney General. We probably need to say the Colorado Attorney General, just for clarity. And then I think you need to indicate in here at the very end that disclosure must occur prior to being charged with an offense. Now, I understand these need to be brief. I understand. But I think it's really important not to create inference that you can advise somebody anytime, but yet the disclosure has to occur beforehand. I think in order for this ballot to be fair, clear, the title to be fair, clear, unambiguous, and not mislead the voters, those changes need to occur to this title.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Friednesch? Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Gruskin, would you like to respond?
I'll take good suggestions no matter what their source. I really don't have any problems with virtually any of these suggestions. I think my one, let me say at the outset, I think that the clarification to business entities, agents, and employees is fine. I don't know that the title has to be exactly reflective of the commission, particularly because it's an existing law. I think you have a little bit more flexibility. But I'm totally fine with where Mr. Pre-Nash goes on that introductory clause that's underlined, taking out the word employees and substituting high managerial agents, agents. I have no problem with his language about creating a private right of action by any Colorado resident. I don't think that the whole point of a private right of action is that it's going to be brought by individuals. So I don't think you need that by any Colorado resident language. But if Mr. Friednesh feels that that's important language, it doesn't bother me. Likewise, I don't have any problem with his inclusion of a more expansive description of agent in that same reference to the civil actions. Seems to me that's fine. He raised the issue of the revenue exemption. That to me seems like, I'm not really sure that you could find 1 in 100 people who knew what the word Arviscal meant, as long as you left the state capital out of your survey area. And more to the point, I'm not really sure that that's a central element of the measure, which is this board's test. If you want to put it in, I mean, that's not a battle as far as I'm concerned, but I think you got plenty of room not to put it in. Now, I wasn't exactly sure. That brings us then just to the language about the affirmative defense. I don't think you need to insert Colorado as a modifier to Attorney General. Again, if you want to do it, go for it. But I think that that's the assumption, since there's no way that the Colorado statutes could be amended to require the U.S. Attorney General or any other state Attorney General to have any sort of role here. Requiring persons, Mr. Friednesh wanted to use the word requiring, and I guess you'd have to change it so that it would be requiring that persons disclose to the Colorado Attorney General all facts known to them in order to qualify for an affirmative defense. Doesn't really affect me one way or the other, but I'm okay with that. I think that the aspect of including the language prior to any charges is fine, but again, I don't think it's a central detail. If you want to put it in, the proponents have no objection whatsoever.
Can I go back to the, if you wouldn't mind, going back to the first one, because I probably got confused. In line three, the reference to certain employees,
mm-hmm.
Was it there that you were saying, instead of saying certain employees, we could simply change it to high managerial agent?
No, I think Mr. Friednesh wants to take out the word certain.
Okay.
And then after the comma, after and, or after employees, it says and I think he wants to insert the words high managerial as a modifier to agents. I didn't think that was all that descriptive, but if the term of art being is somehow more communicative to voters than the definition itself, summary of the definition, I'm totally okay with it.
I'll tell you what I would suggest to deal with that is, after business entities on line three, get rid of agents and including, and then get rid of certain, and then I would leave out high managerial, because I'm not sure it, I think I agree with Mr. Gruskin that it, I don't know that it adds much. I mean, the description that comes after agents defines high managerial, right? They're the ones who formulate a business's policies or supervise employees, and so it's kind of redundant. But I do think you could get rid of a little. I'm not sure that the agents including part is necessary, and then you avoid using agent over and over again. I think could be a little confusing. So that's what I would suggest.
And what was that again, Mr. Domenico?
Well, working off of Mr. Gruskin's draft, on the third line, it says liability to a business entity's agents, comma, including, and I would get rid of agents, comma, including, and just go straight to liability to a business entity's directors, officers, and then I would get rid of certain, as Mr. Friednash suggested, employees, and then I would leave the rest, the way Mr. Gruskin suggested.
Okay. And you're okay with that, Mr. Gruskin? And I thought that the word certain was there because it's just those employees who are authorized to act on behalf of the business entity, but
every employee is authorized to act on behalf. I mean, that's what being an employee is, right? That's what, I mean, I'm confused really how this is going to work out. It's part of the problem, obviously. But I mean, that's what everyone's authorized to do something.
Well, and I was looking at it more narrowly. Instead of it being an agent being any employee of a business entity, being at least somebody who could act on behalf in the sense of speaking for or binding the entity or something. Granted, in a sense, everybody does act on behalf. And literally, I think you're right, Mr. Domenico. I just wasn't looking, you know, I was assuming that that an agent was somebody who actually has some powers on behalf of the business entity, but perhaps I'm wrong.
I think you raise a very good point. That's why we used the word certain originally, because I think the case law is fairly clear that not every employee is authorized to act on behalf of the business entity. If you are a member of the maintenance staff and you go in and you sign checks, those probably aren't binding checks of the entity.
That's not what the measure says, or what the statute. I mean, this is not your fault. You're not changing this part. But what the statute says is agent means any director, officer, or employee of a business entity, or any other person who is authorized to act on it. The way I read that is agent includes all employees and other people who may not be employees but who are authorized to act on behalf of the business entity. So now, how that would apply to who you would hold criminally liable, I'm not clear how this would work out. But that's what the definition of agent says to me in the current statute, which isn't being changed.
Well, I think that's a good point. I was overlooking the fact that it does say director, officer, or employee without limitation.
I think for purposes of setting the title, whether, you know, this is a matter that the courts are ultimately going to establish, but for purposes of setting the title, I accept Mr. Friednash's change. There can't be an argument that somehow reference to employees is going to be misleading.
Okay. Well, shall we go ahead and propose a change here and maybe to kind of take these one by one, unless there's more questions, or Mr. Gruskin, you have other things to say about, I think you've covered Mr. Friednash's points. I guess I'd first like to discuss Mr. Domenico's suggestion with respect to line 3, which I think is to strike the word, at the beginning, strike agents, comma, including, and then strike the word certain, I believe. And is that it?
That was my suggestion, yeah.
So we would read, extending criminal liability to a business entity's directors, officers, employees, and agents who formulate, et cetera. I think I'm fine with that, and I think Mr. Friednash is fine with that. He's nodding yes. So, Mr. Carton?
Need officers and employees there. The way that it reads right now, can it be construed to mean all directors, officers, employees, policies, or supervise employees? Only agents who formulate a business policy or supervise employees are the high managerial agents. Say it differently. The way that you just read it sounds as though it only extends liability to directors, officers, well, not only, extends liability directors, officers, employees, and agents who formulate a business policies or supervise act. It's broader than that.
Right. I think you're right. I think that would be a good clarification to the language. You're saying this phrase, who formulated a business's policies, et cetera, only modifies agents,
uh-huh.
as opposed to modifying everything that precedes it.
Thanks.
So I think we could insert, I mean, makes sense to me to insert the word and after officers and strike the comma after employees so that it reads, and I guess I'll just make this motion for discussion purposes, that the first part of that clause would read, extending criminal liability to a business entity's directors, comma, officers, comma, and employees, and agents who formulate a business's policies, et cetera. Do I have that correct? And is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion?
I think that's an improvement, but...
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Did you vote?
I did.
Okay. 3-0. Other changes to Mr. Gruskin's draft? Yes, I'd like to support Mr. Friednach's suggestion about the private right of action. This is in line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, line 6, I think. And I think for discussion purposes, I'm not sure this is what I'm about to say is sufficiently economical, but I guess I would suggest striking the phrase creating a civil action and substituting the phrase allowing any Colorado resident to bring an action for civil damages and then pick up again with what's already there against a business entity or its agent. So that clause would read, allowing any Colorado resident to bring an action for civil damages against a business or its agent for such criminal conduct. Is there any support for that? I guess I'll make that a motion for the sake of discussion. And if there's not a second...
I'll second it. I think that's an improvement.
Okay. Discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Mr. Carton.
Your process, are we going to put all these up once?
I'll read them into the record.
Okay.
We're
working off Mr. Grieskin's.
Yes, staff. If that's okay. And then this is kind of the old-fashioned way, but we'll just have to do it that way. And I'll read it into the record once we're done.
iMedia assistance, or how can we?
That'll be version 2.0. We'll work on that one next time. Knowing that when Mr. Gruskin comes, he sometimes brings his own draft. So, any other suggested changes to this to Mr. Gruskin's draft?
You know, I sort of leave it up to you guys, but I actually thought that a statement about exempting the award in the civil action from revenue limits might add something to some people. I guess I sort of agree with Mr. Gruskin. It's probably not central, but it is something that. Part of it that not insignificant, I don't think. So I don't know. I think that might be a valuable addition.
It first struck me that way, but I guess the more I thought about it, and based on Mr. Gruskin's comments, it does strike me that outside the Capitol and the Capitol complex are just, I'm not sure that would mean much to those people.
Well, I mean, I agree that Bird Arbuthnot doesn't mean anything to most people, but I think most people do understand that there are revenue limits on the state, and I would bet more people understand that concept than know what the general fund is versus some other fund, and we've got the general fund in there. So, I mean, I can go either way on that. I mean, I also suppose people will understand this is unlikely to be a huge amounts of money, although who knows, but so it may not be a big concern. It doesn't look like it. It's not really a revenue measure. So I just thought I'd throw that one out there.
I guess not real compelled to add it.
All right, I won't make a motion.
Part of the measure.
Okay. Any other changes to Mr. Gruskin's draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt Mr. Gruskin's draft as amended? Mr. Carton so moves. I'll second that. And so before we vote, let me read then what the title would be into the record. The title would be An Amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes Concerning Liability for Criminal Conduct of Businesses, comma. Oh, before I would like to make one other suggested change, and that is after the word and before in connection therewith, insert a comma. I think we normally put one there. So it'd be businesses, comma, and comma, in connection therewith, comma. Is there any objection to that change? And I will start my reading over again with that comma. So the Mr. Carton's motion, I think, is, since that was a friendly amendment to your motion.
I deem that a friendly amendment.
Thank you. The title would read as follows. An amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning liability for criminal conduct of businesses, comma, and, comma, in connection therewith, comma, extending criminal liability to a business entity's directors, comma, officers, comma, and employees, and agents who formulate a business's policies or supervise employees, comma, if the business fails to perform duties that are required by law, or if management engages in, comma, authorizes, comma, solicits, comma, requests, comma, commands, comma, or knowingly tolerates the business's criminal conduct, semicolon, allowing any Colorado resident to bring an action for civil damages against a business or its agent for such criminal conduct, semicolon, requiring that awards in civil actions be paid to the general fund of the state of Colorado, semicolon, permitting an award of attorney fees and cost to a citizen who brings a successful civil action, semicolon, and allowing persons who disclose to the Attorney General all facts known to them concerning a business's criminal conduct to use that disclosure as an affirmative defense to criminal or civil charges, period. And then the ballot title and submission clause would be the same, but in the form of a question, so that it would begin, shall there be an amendment, et cetera, and then ending with a quote, question mark. I think that's the motion. Any further discussion?
Well, I'll just explain why. I mean, since I think it contains two subjects, why I'm going to have to vote against it, even though I think it does a good job of laying out what's in there. I mean, just the single subject stated as liability for criminal conduct of businesses could contain all sorts of things in addition to these. You could be creating dozens of new substantive crimes, could be doing all sorts of things. The way it's written now makes pretty clear that me that within that rubric of liability for criminal conduct of businesses, you're doing two really different things. The first part extending liability to all these individuals and then creating this civil action. And so, while I think the title reflects the measure fairly well, I think it highlights for me why I've got this difficulty with the single subject. So that's why I'll vote no.
Okay, thank you. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. That completes action on number 57, and the time is 10:19 a.m. Let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll proceed with the other agenda item.